You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the earth. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, May 19th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show where I am streaming to you from a plane flying over the ocean on my way to Anchorage, Alaska. I'm not really here at Delta 9 House and Studios. We've pre-recorded this show early in the morning, but we've got plenty of stuff for you. Fresh content for today's show, including John Hudak from Brookings Institute joins us for our first installment of Pot and Public Policy. We'll get you all updated on what's happening up on Capitol Hill with respect to ending adult marijuana prohibition. Also on the show, our second installment of the Marijuana Policy Insider. We visit with Matt Simon, the New England coordinator for policy in the Marijuana Policy Project. He'll get us updated on what's happening in Vermont and New Hampshire as New England continues to reform its marijuana laws. Also on the show, the debut of our new Friday feature, the Reefer Rock Review with Herb Thrasher from 420radio.org. He stopped in yesterday and we talked a little bit about the passing of Chris Cornell. And we've also got some drug war data mining for you, and we start things off as usual with our cannabis headline news. We're back in just 2 minutes. Stick around.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
It's time for cannabis facts about Alzheimer's from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for a cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from the Burning Issues podcast on cannabisradio.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Friday, May 19th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. Vermont Governor Phil Scott has until the end of the day next Wednesday to decide whether to sign into law a bill that would legalize possession of marijuana. Senate Secretary John Bloomer delivered the bill, S-22, to the governor's office Thursday morning. By law, the governor has 5 days to respond. Saturday counts, but Sunday doesn't. The first-term Republican governor indicated Wednesday that he doesn't know whether he will sign the bill, veto it, or allow it to become law without his signature. He said that while he is not philosophically opposed to legalizing possession of marijuana, he has concerns about highway safety and youth access to the drug.
Quote, I have to do what I think is right for the state throughout from a public safety standpoint, end quote, he said. The bill would legalize possession of up to an ounce of marijuana and home cultivation of up to 2 mature plants per household starting in July of 2018. It would not legalize the sale or commercial growing of marijuana. A group pushing to legalize recreational marijuana in Michigan scored a victory Thursday when the State Board of Canvassers approved the wording of a ballot proposal the group wants to place before voters in 2018. The group, known as the Coalition to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol, can now begin collecting the 252,523 signatures from registered Michigan voters needed to get the measure on the ballot. The signatures must be collected by May 30th of next year to put the proposal on the November 2018 ballot. The group's proposal would legalize and regulate marijuana for recreational use. People 21 and older could use the substance, but could not consume it in a public place or drive under the influence. Retail sales of marijuana would be subject to a 10% excise tax and a 6% sales tax, dollars that would go to roads, public schools, and local governments. Rhode Island Speaker of the House Nicholas Mattiello said marijuana legalization legislation will likely be referred to a study commission. While proponents of taxing and regulating marijuana in Rhode Island are claiming passage of legalization legislation would result in at least $48 million in tax revenue, Mattiello said the outlook in 2017 for passage is unlikely. But supportive lawmakers are working on a compromise approach that would enact provisions of legalization this year and then let decisions on issues like edibles, product testing, business licensing, and local opt-out be triggered by a study commission's recommendations. Representatives Diana DeGette and Mike Kaufman of Colorado today introduced a bill to ensure that the federal government does not preempt state laws on marijuana. The Respect States and Citizens' Rights Act of 2017 clarifies congressional intent and provides guidance for courts. DeGette and Kaufman teamed up on a similar bill in 2012 just after Coloradoans approved legalizing marijuana by a margin of 6 points. They are introducing it anew at a time when the Trump administration has been signaling its intention to challenge state marijuana laws. Alarmed by several explosions in residential areas caused by drug processing labs, the California State Assembly on Thursday voted unanimously to ban home manufacturing of marijuana concentrates using volatile solvents. The action comes ahead of plans by the state to begin issuing licenses in January to firms for the manufacture and sale of marijuana products in California. The measure, which next goes to the Senate for consideration, would ban the use of volatile solvents and require those making hash oils and other cannabis concentrates to get a special permit. The state Senate has approved a revised bill expanding the permissible uses for medical marijuana in Delaware, 2 days after the original measure failed to win passage amid unaddressed concerns of the medical industry. Senators on Thursday approved a motion to rescind Tuesday's roll call, then passed the revised bill unanimously. The revised bill strikes a provision that added debilitating anxiety to the list of conditions and illnesses for which medical marijuana can be prescribed. The anxiety definition includes generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and social anxiety. Instead, the amended legislation only removes the requirement that a psychiatrist sign an application for someone seeking to use medical marijuana to treat post-traumatic stress. Instead, any physician would be allowed to verify the application. The inaugural Cannabis Classic takes place this weekend in Anchorage, Alaska. I will be acting as host and will be presenting the Industry and Cultivator Awards Saturday night at 7 p.m. Alaska time. The Marijuana Agenda will stream the event live if possible. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Friday, May 19th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all respected customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Marijuana Policy Insider with Marijuana Policy Project. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is Marijuana Policy Insider, brought to you by the Marijuana Policy Project at MPP.org. MPP is the nation's largest marijuana policy organization, promoting sensible marijuana policy reform in Congress, in state legislatures, and through state and local ballot initiatives. Today, we take a look at the most recent state and federal reform efforts with the Marijuana Policy Insider.
Welcome to the Marijuana Policy Insider. I'm Russ Belville. Joining us today on the podcast, we have Matt Simon. He's the New England political director for the Marijuana Policy Project. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Russ. Great to be here.
It's a pretty exciting time for marijuana and politics in the New England region. Of course, Massachusetts and Maine passed their legalization in 2016, and now we look toward Vermont and New Hampshire, which are moving forward on marijuana reforms. Let's start with the state of Vermont, where the legislature has been the first in the nation to pass a marijuana legalization measure. Matt, can you tell us about the measure and the prospects it faces at the governor's desk?
Sure. So the bill is S-22, and it represents a compromise between the House and Senate that they reached in the very end of session. So what the bill would simply do is eliminate Vermont's current civil penalty for possessing an ounce or less of marijuana, and would also legalize limited cultivation, two mature plants, four immature plants. And this would go into effect next July 1st, 2018. The bill would also include, and this is what the Senate wanted, a study commission to look at regulating and taxing and to make recommendations for that by November of this year. Those recommendations would have to be passed in the form of a law next session, but it would put Vermont on a path, if this bill does become law, to be virtually right with Massachusetts and Maine, or at least maybe just a little bit behind in actually implementing legalization.
So the sticking point on taxing and regulating came out of the House. Had it been pointed out to them that you've got Maine and Massachusetts with legal sales right next door, people are just going to skip over the border, aren't they?
Well, they absolutely are. And, you know, people are already legally able to grow in Massachusetts and share with their friends who happen to live right across the border. It's a reality that stores will be open next summer. So that's a reality that I think, I mean, certainly support in the House has increased for taxing and regulating. Last year, a bill, the Senate passed a regulate and tax bill, and it got pretty well clobbered in the House. There's a lot more support this year, but it's not quite there yet. Maybe one study commission with some good recommendations, and the House will be ready to join the Senate next year and passing that kind of bill.
It seems kind of strange to me when we look at the state of Vermont, which has okayed the existence of medical dispensaries for people, but seems reticent on the recreational side of the ledger. As the Senate moves forward with those study commissions, do you anticipate any particular solutions, maybe something similar to what happened in Nevada and Oregon, where the medical dispensaries were given the green light to sell to recreational customers while they began putting together the programs? Or is there any indication one way or the other from what the Senate might do?
Well, what the Senate might do is entirely dependent on what the governor does, actually. I mean, if this bill does not become law, if the governor vetoes it, then there is no study commission and there is no legalization next summer. We would just be starting from scratch in January. So if the governor really cares about the things he says he's concerned about, which are public safety, public health, impaired driving and that sort of thing, he should want this study commission. He should want serious time to be put into those issues during legislative off season. I think that's one reason among many that he may find his way into this. His options are sign it, veto it, or allow it to become law without his signature. And that's actually how Vermont got its first medical cannabis law back in 2004. Former Governor Jim Douglas wasn't willing to sign it, but he was persuaded not to veto it, and it went onto the books and was something that we were able to improve over the years. So that could happen here. That's what we hope happens, and then we can have that study commission and really talk about how to move the state forward.
You mentioned the governor letting it become law without signature back in 2004. You've had a series of different governors since then, and in between, a governor that was fairly positive on taxing and regulating marijuana. What's the status of this latest governor, Phil Scott, the Republican? He said he's not ideologically opposed to legalization, but he's still holding back. Do you think he's going to sign this or veto this? What are the political winds showing you right now?
Right. Well, it's very different. It's been very different this year dealing with Phil Scott's administration. The previous governor, Peter Shumlin, was a strong supporter of regulating and taxing marijuana, and his administration was helpful in many ways advancing the conversation, and that has not been the case quite so much this year. But, you know, I think what the governor said is correct. He doesn't seem to be philosophically opposed, but he has concerns. I think he was elected with a lot of support from the police chiefs and others in law enforcement who explicitly praised his non-support for legalization. So that's a factor that may keep him from signing the bill. But he seems to clearly understand that it's coming whether he likes it or not. And should he wait around until the votes are there to override him, or would it be better to put the state on this path? And since it's such a reasoned slow, some would say far too slow, path, it may be much more difficult for him to veto under those circumstances.
So if he does allow this to become law, we are talking about a legalization proposal with 1 ounce of possession, 2 mature plants, 4 immature plants allowed to be cultivated. Are there any other considerations in this law that consumers and cultivators need to know about?
Well, it's really pretty much a simple criminal justice reform. There are some other provisions. We just posted a detailed summary at mtp.org on the Vermont page if people want to read all of the specifics. But this is a bill that came out of the House Judiciary Committee. They didn't want to deal with regulation or taxes. They wanted to deal with this as a simple criminal justice reform. And I think that's what the bill reflects, plus that study commission.
All right. Let's encourage everyone to check out mpp.org and search for the Vermont page. You can get more information there. Let's look at the rest of New England, which has typically been one of the strongest areas of support for marijuana law reform, with one notable exception, the state of New Hampshire, right next door to Vermont there, which has for the longest time been the only state in New England that still maintains any sort of criminal penalties for personal possession. What is the status of reform in the state of New Hampshire?
Well, in New Hampshire, I'm happy to say after a long 10 years, actually, that I've been working on it in New Hampshire, 10 years in which the House has passed decrim 8 times, and it always dies in the Senate. So this year, the Senate finally passed a decriminalization bill. It's going to Governor Sununu's desk, and he's put out a statement saying that he's eager to sign it. So that's going to happen in the next few weeks. It'll become law 60 days after it is signed, and it'll apply to 3/4 of an ounce or less of cannabis. It'd be a $100 fine for a first offense or a second offense, and a $300 fine for a third offense.
And this is a situation where it's kind of the flip side of what happened in Vermont, where you went from a supportive governor to one who's a little more reticent. In New Hampshire, you had a very opposing governor in Maggie Hassan, and now you've got the new governor there, Chris Sununu. Tell us about the change in your life, in your work there in New England, as you deal with these different administrations.
Well, it's really been, the election completely changed both of those state houses and both of those executive branches in a major way. And, in New Hampshire, going from Maggie Hassan, who people may know as a Democrat, but was not willing to go along with even very limited decriminalization. And she was considered a pretty liberal Democrat, except for that issue. It really kind of made it difficult to get some other Democrats on board, and we were always a couple votes short of being able to override and during her administration. And having Chris Sununu, who's a Republican and in many ways conservative, his father was a noted drug warrior, was part of the Bush senior administration, and for his 42-year-old son, who's a little more pragmatic and, you know, has a little bit of a libertarian streak himself. He just sees it as a total, you know, a not good use of limited resources to be arresting people. He's not there on legalization, but he has on that. He said just the other day, for the first time, he said he's open to that concept, and that was kind of groundbreaking coming from him. So we hope to have a study commission in New Hampshire as well that'll be willing to have that conversation. And given what's happening in neighboring states, it looks like that's going to be approved.
So give us real quickly any other updates we might need to know from the New England region. We know Maine and Massachusetts are moving forward with recreational. Rhode Island is considering looking at recreational. What are some of the strong points we can look forward to in the future?
Yeah, well, Connecticut's actually still interesting. The budget negotiations are going on, and they have a massive shortfall, and there are teams of lawmakers that want to put forward regulating and taxing marijuana in the budget, and that seems to be actually being seriously talked about in Connecticut. Massachusetts and Maine just continue with implementation. Obviously, the sooner we can get retail stores up and running in those states, the sooner, you know, they'll be setting an example for the rest of the region, and people will be able to see what all the fuss is about. And it's really just a store that you have to be 21 to get into that only sells cannabis and cannabis products, and that's way better than the alternative. And I'm very optimistic about the near-term future, the next 2 to 3 years in New England. It's really going to change this region, I think, for the better.
Things are looking up in the New England region, and we, of course, have a lot of thanks to give to Marijuana Policy Project and Matt Simon for doing the yeoman's work out there in getting reform happening through both Democratic and Republican administrations. It's always a tightrope walk that you have to perform to be able to work both sides of the aisle, and nobody does it better. Matt, thanks for joining us here on the Marijuana Policy Insider, and good luck with the states up there and getting the reforms passed.
Hey, thanks very much, Russ. It's been a pleasure.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for Police for Reform with Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
So I read this story at the Denver Post that presented three interesting statistics about the state of Colorado. Number one, the number of citations for driving while under the influence of marijuana dropped by 33.2%, about a third. Two, 50% of marijuana users say they have driven high. And three, 55% of marijuana users said they believed it was safe to drive while under the influence. So these facts led a Department of Transportation spokesman to remark, "We're still troubled by the fact that marijuana users are still telling us they routinely drive high." Well, why? Aren't a third fewer citations for marijuana DUIs a good thing? Consider that if number two is true, then if number one is also true, doesn't that argue that number three might be truer than presumed? It might be safer to drive under the influence than presumed. A spokesman for the State Patrol even inadvertently underscored this point. The Denver Post reported him explaining that troopers have great experience busting stone drivers through personal contact and driving behavior. Okay, so if police are great at busting stone drivers, but they're busting fewer of them, if the tokers are driving high and the cops are catching fewer of them, again, what is the problem? This scaremongering about marijuana and driving seems to be based on the idea that legalization invents stoned drivers. Don't you think if stoned driving were a real problem, we'd have seen a huge spike in traffic fatalities around 1979 when we recorded the greatest rate of lifetime teenage marijuana use? Or maybe 1996 when California passed the Compassionate Use Act? Or perhaps 2012, when Washington and Colorado legalized adult use. But instead, we've seen traffic fatality rates decline by 38% in the past two decades. Yes, yes, much of that decline owes to safer cars and roads and laws. But marijuana doesn't seem to be making the roads any more dangerous. Well, while the critics of legalization will try to gin up some danger by reeling off these trumped-up statistics about marijuana-related crashes or fatalities. But marijuana-related means we found evidence proving the driver was a marijuana user. Not that the driver had recently used marijuana or that the impairment from marijuana's active ingredient, THC, was in any way to blame for the crash. Inactive THC metabolites proving marijuana use remain detectable for days or weeks. So, if you legalize marijuana and more adults are using it more often, you're going to find more dead drivers with metabolites in their systems. And that's about as relevant as noting how many more married gay people are dying in car crashes these days since the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage. Now, this isn't to argue that people should do bong rips down the freeway. Marijuana use can and does impair important driving skills in infrequent users. But the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration confirms that, controlling for age and gender, THC-positive drivers are no more statistically likely to crash than sober drivers. Even the FDA's approved synthetic THC medicine, Marinol, or dronabinol, comes with a label that warns its users not to drive, and that it says specifically should be warned not to drive until it is established that they are able to tolerate the drug. Well, frequent marijuana consumers do develop this tolerance. Take Addie Norton. She was profiled in a Washington State local TV news story about marijuana and driving. She showed up and aced the driving test at three times the legal limit for active THC. She reached 11 times the legal limit before the state trooper observing the test said she was driving borderline. At 11 times the legal limit for alcohol, she'd be dead. Troopers want some sort of breathalyzer for marijuana, but that won't work.
The same amount of THC that doesn't phase a frequent consumer would leave a newbie drooling on the couch. Cops only want the breathalyzer because, obviously, tokers aren't driving and acting erratically enough to catch them without it. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, the Northwest Cannabis Chronicle, part two of the Henry Rollins keynote.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Veterans of Compassion with the Veterans Cannabis Group. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is Pot and Public Policy. As marijuana legislation continues throughout the United States, it becomes less of an issue of if and when, and more of an issue of how the laws and regulations are crafted. Today, we learn more about the administration and bureaucracy behind ending adult cannabis prohibition with another expert from the world of pot and public policy.
Welcome to Pot and Public Policy. I'm Russ Belville. Joining us today on the program, we have John Hudak. He's a senior fellow for governance studies and the deputy director of the Center for Effective Public Management at the Brookings Institute. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
With marijuana reform taking such a prominent level, gaining such attention at the state level, it's interesting to watch how the federal government is reacting to the states. And we have a number of congressmen who are working to reform federal laws to help the states that have passed these marijuana reforms. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about what's happening at the federal level with respect to marijuana issues?
I think for people in the marijuana advocacy community, this new Congress is an exciting time and offers an exciting space. And here's why. I'm not going to say that all of the challenges facing the marijuana industry or all of the wants and needs of the marijuana advocacy community are going to be achieved or delivered by this Congress. In fact, I would venture to guess that probably none of them will be. But there's been a real change in tone in this Congress, and that's the first step toward federal level, meaningful federal level policy change. What you're seeing is that in the wake of really divisive partisanship and investigations into the president and criticisms of members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, you're seeing marijuana poke through as something that people are very eager to unite around. And it ends up being, in some ways, a safe space that cuts above this partisan gridlock. And, you know, we've seen this week there was a press conference on Capitol Hill with Tom Garrett, a Republican from Virginia, and Tulsi Gabbard, a Democrat from Hawaii, coming together, two people who almost certainly don't vote together on many things, talking about a new bill that they have called Ending Federal Marijuana Prohibition Act. And that is something that speaks not just to the nature of their engagement, but to the engagement between many members of Congress. It's moving into the Senate in a way that I think is starting the ball rolling toward serious change in the coming years.
That's interesting, because I was going to ask if you thought the scandals surrounding the Trump administration with regard to Russia and everything that's going on there might suck all the oxygen out of the room and make it impossible to move forward. But it sounds as if you're saying this is a welcome respite from all of that for some of our Congress members.
I think it really is, but I will caution to say that I do think that the investigations into the president, which are seemingly getting more complex and more serious every day, will suck the oxygen out of the room in terms of passing legislation. And so this happens in Congresses during periods of scandal, whether they're congressional scandals or they are presidential scandals. And I think regardless of your position on whether the president has done something very wrong, or that his team has, or that you think that this is drummed up nonsense, the reality is these are serious investigations, serious in the sense that they are ongoing, they are widespread, and they are taking a lot of congressional attention. And so that naturally does affect the progress and the capacity and the productivity of a Congress. But what we're finding is that beyond being able to vote, I think members of Congress are getting to know each other around these issues. And when you're a member of Congress and you're day after day just at each other's throats with the other side, having some issue, any issue, whether it's criminal justice reform, whether it's marijuana policy, whether it's veterans issues, the opioid crisis, if there's a place that you can talk to someone from the other party, I think most of your listeners probably won't believe it, but members of Congress actually like that. They like having that opportunity. And in a big way, marijuana is that opportunity.
Interesting. And you mentioned the change of tone up on Capitol Hill. And I saw a tweet coming across this week where Ben Sasse and Chuck Schumer, two senators, were making some sort of joke about how it looked like they were smoking reefers in one of their photographs. Meanwhile, on the other side of the aisle, you get people like Jeff Sessions and Governor Chris Christie, Attorney General Sessions and Governor Chris Christie, who are seemingly trying to revive the gateway theory and the drug policies in the 1980s. So speak a little to that, to the tone, and whether the tone is better on one side of the aisle or the other.
You know, I think it's hard to imagine that there's a scenario in which Democrats don't just relish the opportunity to stick it to President Trump. And in many ways, they certainly do. But the magnitude of the scandals that are going on right now actually becomes sickening to members of Congress on both sides. And so in those situations, there's actually some real motivation to get away from it and to talk to each other and to get to know each other and to talk about something other than Donald Trump and Russia and Mike Flynn and the rest. And so there's this picture from Capitol Hill where Senator Sasse from Nebraska is in running clothes, and Chuck Schumer looks like he's just coming off the set of the newest Hangover movie. His tie's undone, his hair's a mess, his shirt's unbuttoned, and Tom Cotton from Arkansas has his back to the camera, and of course he's buttoned up like a narc. But he it's a really silly picture, but I think it speaks to this real desire for people to break away from it, even if it's for a few minutes, and just, you know, shoot the shit about something else. And then, like you said, you have the other side, which is a few members of the administration, some number of members of this administration, who are actively building a time machine back to the 1950s when it comes to drug policy, where the solution to addiction is criminalization, where the gateway theory is something that hasn't been disproven, that there's something about our criminal justice system that means we need to fill more prisons and take opportunities away from more people. And it's this weird disconnect in Washington, and disconnects in Washington are certainly nothing new. But it is odd when you look at Congress, which is usually so detached from what the public is thinking. Actually, doing a lot of things that the public is asking for, and at least trying to behave a little more civilly. And you contrast that with an administration that is new to office, and you would think would be riding on the wave of public sentiment, in many cases doing everything they can to subvert public sentiment and the public will.
One of those subversions of the public's will seems to be the reversal of the Holder era memo that relaxed some of the prosecutorial standards with regards to mandatory minimum sentences. And I was a bit taken aback by the bipartisan condemnation of that move. And even from outside of politics, we had Christian broadcaster Pat Robertson, the former 1980s presidential candidate, excoriating Attorney General Sessions for this move. Did that catch you by surprise, the wholesale condemnation, it seems?
It did not, actually. And here's why I wasn't surprised, because it's such bad policy. You know, most people, when there's a new policy, you know, they fall in line behind what their party thinks. And then there are policies that are so beyond the pale that even your partisanship can't make you look the other way. And this is Jeff Sessions. This isn't U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions. This is old-timey Alabama Attorney General Jeff Sessions at work. And this policy is not something that is thoughtful. It's not something that is in line with what most Americans think. It's something that's hateful. It's something that's going to have very serious racial effects. It's something that both empowers prosecutors to do things and then also restricts prosecutors from doing things. And so let me break that down a little. The Attorney General is encouraging U.S. attorneys to explore as much as they can to get to a certain outcome. So that offers some prosecutorial discretion. And prosecutorial discretion, particularly in the criminal justice system, is oftentimes the capstone of change. But what he also does is he hems in the U.S. attorneys, the federal prosecutors, by saying, if you deviate from mandatory minimum sentences, from just oppressively harsh charges and sentencing, you have to explain exactly why, and we're going to be watching you at every step. And so for these small government conservatives, they certainly look like big government, big brother, pro-prison, there's not even an ideology or a party to slap onto the end of that one. And so, yeah, it's very alarming. And in terms of the bipartisan condemnation, I think, like with marijuana policy, it's one of those things that people can join hands and agree on. And I mean, when you have, you know, Bernie Sanders agreeing with the Koch brothers, that gives you an idea of how devastating this policy really is, and just how bad, like I said at the beginning, just how bad it is. It's just stupid public policy from a man who doesn't get it.
Well put. And one last topic to discuss as far as at the federal level, protections for the states that are engaged in reforming their marijuana laws. We did see the Rohrabacher-Blumenauer amendment included with the federal appropriations package. How long does that protect us? And do you have any updates on, I heard there was a problem with including North Dakota in that.
Sure. So the what is now the Rohrabacher-Blumenauer Amendment, which was previously the Rohrabacher-Farr Amendment, but Sam Farr has since retired from Congress, was part of the continuing resolution that was passed last month that continued funding the U.S. government through September. And so this is good law. The same protections that were in place last time around this will continue in place until September, except other states that have since amended their laws to include, to expand medical marijuana, have been included with, oddly, the exception of North Dakota, because I haven't heard exactly why that is, but they were left off the list. I do think that North Dakota, if the system got up and running and federal prosecutors stepped in and tried to do something, North Dakota would probably have some sort of claim to say that the legislative intent was to cover all states and that their exclusion was a mistake. It's not a solid claim, but it could be one that is made. But the reality is North Dakota just newly legalized medical marijuana. The system is going to be slow to get started, especially with a governor who's opposed. And this amendment, the Rohrabacher-Blumenauer amendment, expires in September when the federal funding, the continuing resolution funding the government expires. And so my guess is in the next round they'll fix these things. It should come as a surprise to no one that members of Congress screw things up once in a while, and I think this was sort of a basic screw-up.
All right. Well, that's good to hear. John Hudak is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute working on governance studies, and we appreciate your expertise here on Pot and Public Policy. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at MJAgenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the UK Cannabis Chronicle from the UK Cannabis Social Clubs. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
As we prepare for the weekend, we remember that the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition is as much about culture as it is about criminal justice. Music has always been at the forefront of revolution, and the marijuana movement is no different. Join us as we visit with Herb Thrasher, program manager at 420radio.org, for this edition of Reefer Rock Review.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Reefer Rock Review, our inaugural episode, but really not too new of a segment for us here. We used to do normal rocks back in the day. And joining us here in studio at Delta 9, we've got Herb Thrasher sitting right here. How you doing, Herb?
Wow, doing great. That sure was a throwback right there, thinking about normal rocks.
Yeah.
Real excited to be here in the studio, excited for you and the marijuana agenda and the new things happening here. And unfortunately, waking up today with the rest of the world to just some awful, tragic news in the rock world. Chris Cornell, founding member of Soundgarden, Temple of the Dog, Audioslave, passes away today.
And yeah.
Just terrible music, terrible news. You know, so much great music. Soundgarden through the 90s, known as a legendary instrumental band. And just terrible news. A lot of rumors going on right now about what possibly could happen. And
I heard there was a confirmation that it was the coroner now has ruled it a suicide, that he hanged himself. And, you know, that just goes to show you. Yeah, I heard people like, wow, why would someone so successful, you know, like Robin Williams or like Chris Cornell, why would they do that? Well, mental illness strikes everybody. It doesn't discriminate if you're rich or famous or talented.
Hearing some news on that. And yeah, you know, depression is a word that has kind of come to the forefront here in the last 20 years. And it's definitely has never waved away from the music industry.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, you know, we kind of have these thoughts that maybe, you know, these artists that we all love, we think we know them to a T. And the truth is that they have a heart and a soul, too. And it's hard to know what happens, you know, within that black hole sun sometimes.
Yeah, no kidding. So rest in peace to Chris Cornell. And, you know, first thing this morning, I pulled up Spotify and just started cranking out Super Unknown.
Yeah, you know, released Super Unknown back in 94. Kind of the album that really jumped him to fame and really known as a masterpiece. But before that, Bad Motorfinger and Loud Love as well, two albums that totally very instrumental in the music world, changing a lot of minds. And, you know, we always think of the Nirvana and Pearl Jam, and Soundgarden was definitely number three. If you look at the big three from the Seattle, that, yeah, you know, grunge is kind of one of those words, but you kind of use it in this situation, and they were definitely one of the big ones. And, you know, Chris Cornell with Audioslave joining the guys from Rage Against the Machine, mm-hmm, totally clicked. I mean, this was a rock band that can totally stand on its own, released two albums, and, you know, when you added up all the albums that Chris Cornell made or wrote on 15 studio albums.
Wow. And people think of Soundgarden and that Seattle scene so synonymous with the 90s, but the band was formed back in 1984, so it's not like an overnight success. They really plugged away at this.
They did. Started in 84. They debuted their first album in 87. And then, you know, and that was a time when you're putting out albums kind of every year when, yeah, when you're in it. And yeah, so at that point in time, very, very busy. Through the MTV, one of those MTV bands, they released Jesus Christ Pose from the Bad Motorfinger album. And once that video hit MTV, it was like Soundgarden hit the mainstream world. And it was a different kind of heavy. And so that's what kind of maybe bridged metal and the grunge fact together.
Yeah. Kim Thayil on guitar, of course, had a lot to do with that too, I would say.
Absolutely. Great guitarist, and no telling what you know, the band's going through last night. Played a show in Michigan
in Detroit.
And just, you know, it's a tough one. It's a tough one, yeah, all the way around for the music industry and the rock world and the band. No telling. Well, the music will definitely live on forever.
And we also recently lost, was it Butch Trux from the Allman Brothers Band?
We did. Drummer? We did lose Butch Trux. In fact, those are kind of the two musicians right now that are leaning on, you know, looking like suicide and depression and kind of, you know, what's going on here? You know, it wasn't like a Lemmy where, you know, Chris Cornell, he's one of those artists where we really thought, you know, we knew he was depressed. We've known he's had a few issues, but he's one of those artists where you kind of thought he had it together. You know,
yeah,
he, there's a mystique about him. There's a quiet, you don't really know everything about him like we do all our artists. So you think Chris Cornell's kind of one of those artists that have it. Like Lemmy, you know, not that we were prepared, but we kind of knew, you know,
yeah,
we're there, you know.
Like, but it wasn't a shock.
Yeah, you know.
Like, and Lemmy lived a hard life.
Yeah, and you know, we got Chris Cornell, and you just wake up, and all of a sudden, just there it is. And if you know, if the reports are true, you know, he took his own life, it just adds a certain something,
and
you know.
You think of that era, and we don't have with us anymore Shannon Hoon, Scott Weiland, Lane Staley, Kurt Cobain. So many of them are gone now.
Oh, man. So many great musicians. And the block just, it's always going to continue to grow. We've hit a time now where musicians are just losing. We got to hug them while we can.
And one other musician, speaking of those that we lost in 2017, the first inducted member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the late, great Chuck Berry.
Yes, Chuck Berry, so influential on the guitar. You hear great musicians, all these guitarists. I mean, Ted Nugent, I've heard him go off on, in fact, you wouldn't have all those great Ted Nugent songs, who goes back to that 50s kind of rock and roll. He just distorted it and turned it up. And I can name a lot of artists like that, but definitely you wouldn't have a lot of artists without Chuck Berry, who was instrumental with the guitar and just the whole the walk. Yeah. He had the stage presence, so many artists gained from that.
Mm. So let's look forward now to stoner rock, what we call reefer rock here on the show. What's happening at 420 Radio and some of the bands that you're interested in spotlighting?
Yeah, excited to get 420 Radio back in the realm of the music world and the cannabis world, kind of bridging the two. Been working real hard behind the scenes to get this back. And I think we're there. Looking forward to getting back with bringing stoner rock back into more of a spotlight. Stoner rock is you know, people get tired of a lot of these labels, and but we love rock and roll, and so many musicians have been a part of the cannabis world, whether they've written a song about cannabis or whether they smoke or whether a member in their band, or whether they play festivals that we do, whatever. There's just many aspects going on, and we look forward to bringing you the festival aspects of it, new releases, videos when they're put out on posted. And so excited to kind of bridge the whole cannabis world and the music world together. 420 Radio, Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, live every Friday night at 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific. And then we have Big Daddy Fink's Funky Roller Rink, Funkin' R&B Disco live at 10 p.m. right after on Friday nights. And looking forward to adding more programming as we kind of get going with this as well.
Yeah, and you can catch that. And, you know, you want it to be radio, you want it to be on the go. Turn your phone into your radio with the 420 Radio app. You got that on iTunes, on Android, BlackBerry even.
Yeah, so you can be on a train, or you can be in your car on the road or whatever, and you can check out 420 Radio. So you can just go to the website, 420radio.org, and you can check it out. You can get the phone app, and you can just click play right there on the website and stream us the music 24/7 going right now as well.
Yeah, and you'll pick up on the latest Facebook and Twitter posts from 420 Radio. Herb's always sending out, you know, links and information for concerts and festivals and stuff. So you'll get that through the app, and it has the song list of the most recent 10 songs. You know, I always hate it when you're listening to the radio and you hear a great song. It's like, who does that song? What album is it? You'll find that out.
Yeah, the phone app does pretty good, has great graphics, and it does keep you posted on the song list and what we have going before and after. So real excited to get this going, 420radio.org, and we'll be adding more and more programming. Don't forget to go to our Facebook page and give us a like and hit us up on Twitter as well. And we're looking forward to be working with the Marijuana Agenda more, doing this segment as well.
Yeah, we'll have this segment on Fridays to get you prepared for Herb Thrasher's live show. You just switch the dial over to 420radio.org, check out the live show. Lots of great music that we can't play on a podcast because you can't record that stuff. But when you're live, you guys got the ASCAP, BMI, all that stuff, and you could play, I imagine you're going to play a lot of Soundgarden.
Really going to play a lot of Soundgarden. In fact, tomorrow night, we're definitely going to do a tribute to Chris Cornell. And, you know, when you're talking about Chris Cornell, you can't really just say Soundgarden now. Because, sure. I mean, this guy put out, as I mentioned, 15 studio albums on his own or with Soundgarden, and Temple of the Dog, which I wasn't really a fan of, but many people were. Yeah. That was a one album that was turned into a cult classic.
Yep, and I will make my request for the Flower Hour tonight. I'll listen from the airport as I head to Anchorage. My request for Chris Cornell's cover of Michael Jackson's Billie Jean.
Nice, all right. We'll have to find that. I have heard that, yeah. And he's actually played that live before, too. You can see YouTube clips of him doing that. And so, yes, one of the great covers. And, you know, it definitely shows the realm of Chris Cornell.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't just like a screamer. I mean, this guy could sing a ballad. He can do anything he wanted. The range was unlimited, and the future was all there.
Mm. What a shame, but we'll still have his music, and check it out tonight, 420radio.org, Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, the tribute to Chris Cornell and other great rock that you'll hear on the show. Herb Thrasher, thanks for stopping into Delta 9, and good luck with the relaunch of 420 Radio.
All right, thank you for having me, and we'll be back next week.
All right, folks.
Out.
That sound there means that's all the time we got for the show today, this pre-recorded episode of the Marijuana Agenda, while I'm making my way to the Cannabis Classic in Anchorage. You want to check it out? Go to GoCannabisClassic.com and check out my Facebook feed at Radical Russ on Facebook. If I can manage it, if they got Wi-Fi there, I will try to Facebook Live the award ceremony so you can see who are the best growers in the state of Alaska. For everyone here at Delta 9 Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and SoundCloud. And follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.